Reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views and the views of our guests. And today we have from Great Britain, Mr. Trevor Coleman, and we've had him on before. We're talking about the problems that are taking place in Great Britain and, of course, the effort to draw England into the European Union. Now, exactly the same thing is happening here in the United States. The President has already signed an agreement. It is an agreement to merge the United States with Mexico and Canada. It's called the Security and Prosperity Partnership. That's SPP, and you can go to their website at spp.gov and learn all about the Security and Prosperity Partnership. And, of course, the Council on Foreign Relations is behind this whole scheme. It hasn't been authorized by Congress. Most people in Congress don't understand. But, of course, it's going to be sold under. It'll make it so easier for people to move back and forth. We won't have to have immigration. We'll have migration. And it'll be producing prosperity. We'll all benefit. We'll have all those wealthy people down in Mexico we can sell to and all those new customers for our expensive and sophisticated products. And, of course, it's all a lie. But then that's pretty much how they were able to convince the British people how they were going to prosper if they just go enter into this economic partnership. But nothing was said initially about, of course, the Parliament that was going to come and the common currency. And, Mr. Coleman, thank you so very much for being with us.
It's my pleasure, Stan.
Why don't you just go ahead and tell our listeners just a little bit about yourself, those who don't remember when we had you on before.
Well, for most of my life, I was a police officer, if you may recall, and most of my time I was an operational frontline police officer in the CIB. I was a detective, and towards the end of my service, I was lucky enough to work in the television industry. I was allowed to do that and carried on that work, and then back in 1999, I went to probably the first time I'd ever been to a political meeting and learnt what I didn't know was going on behind my back, that for the past 34 years now, British politicians, our own politicians, are now making laws and directives that now govern the way we live in this country. So I joined a political party and began to do my bit to try and tell the public exactly what's going on in their own country here in Great Britain.
Well, are you having any success in educating the people there? Is there a growing awareness? Is there a growing concern? Is there a realization of what it will mean when Great Britain ceases to be Great Britain and simply another region in this whole incredible plan that has been laid out by a group of people who think they know what's far better for the English people than the English people themselves?
There is a growing awareness, Stan, but our problem is that all the usual devices that are open to the state are being used to suppress or divert people's attention. A classic example, by the way, is the World Cup, which that's the Soccer World Cup, which is taking place now in Germany, as you know. This is occupying all the media, the television, the radio, the newspapers. And whilst all this is going on, of course, the EU, the European Union, thunders on and closes its trap around us even stronger, and there is no mention of any of this in the papers and on the television. So although there is a growing awareness and a growing concern and anger about what is going on, it's a very slow burning anger, and my
picturesque Monterey Bay. And our guest this afternoon is Mr. Trevor Coleman. Of course, it's midnight over there in Great Britain, and Mr. Coleman spent most of his life in the police force and a detective and had a unique opportunity, of course, to work, you know, within the government. And really, it wasn't until 1999 when he went to a meeting and suddenly realized that, you know, he was working so hard to maintain the British way of life, and suddenly he realizes that the politicians have made agreements that most the Britishers have no idea about, to transfer the sovereignty of their nation to a faceless bureaucracy in Europe. Now, people do not understand that there really are people of great wealth and power who have a different worldview. They want to unite the world. They want to control people's lives. They want to tell them exactly what to do. They want to control every aspect of human endeavor. And only those people within the ruling elite will be, of course, prosperous and free. The rest of the people will be regimented and controlled by faceless bureaucrats you will never see. Well, of course, what most Americans don't understand is exactly the same thing is planned here by exactly the same forces. And, of course, here in America, they are setting up a security and prosperity partnership with Mexico and Canada. And the first thing will be to unite these three countries, and then, of course, the countries of Central America, which is what CAFTA is all about, and which is why the president spent something like $200 billion of favors to congressmen to get them to vote for something that the American people didn't want. But the elite really don't care what the American people want, any more than the elite in Europe, and specifically in Great Britain, care what the British people want. So Mr. Coleman is saying that he's been trying to awaken people there. And, of course, in Great Britain, what are the people doing? Why, they're watching the World Soccer Cup, just exactly as here in the United States, you know, in the evening news, instead of having news and telling us what's going on, we're hearing about hockey, or we're hearing about the World Soccer match that's being held in Europe, and we'll pick up the story there. You were just saying what difficult time it was to get people thinking.
Yes, indeed it is, Stan. As I was saying, they're using all the devices that they've got. What's amazing is, of course, that in this country, and I suspect in your country too, the people have never been consulted. Do they want this? It's almost as if it's such an arrogant world going on. And they accept that the people don't want it, but they still just carry on. I'm amazed to hear, by the way.
Hold that thought just a moment. We've got to bring our other stations on right this very minute now. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Mr. Coleman was just talking about how, you know, how difficult it is to get the information out. And pick the story up there. You were saying how amazed you were?
Yeah, I'm amazed since the last time we spoke, which wasn't that long ago, the developments that are taking place in America. It just seems to be going down exactly the same path that we've gone down for the last 20 years.
Well, I think that it's been planned for a long period of time. In fact, I really believe the major force behind this whole move to create this world government has been coming from the
operation on some of the continental countries, mainly Germany and France. And, of course, they are the sort of engine behind most of what's taking place. By regionalizing our country, breaking up Great Britain into 12 regions, they'll do away with the old county structures, which you've got in America, and all the local and things that are British and English, they've got to vanish, and they've got to go, and we've got to be, if you like, Europeanized, and the way to do that, of course, is to break us up into these small units that are controlled and answerable only to Brussels, and that's what they're doing at the moment.
Well, no, because my understanding is that there's a lot of trouble. Certainly we've heard a lot about the riots in France, you know, with the Muslims there rioting and burning cars. And really, this wasn't just in Paris, but it was really all over the country, 50 or 100 cities. A carefully coordinated program, but of course, anybody who suggested that somebody was organizing the carefully coordinated program would be labeled a conspiratologist or something of the sort. Well, what about England? What about the racial makeup of your country? And is there a lot of friction there, or at least the potential for friction?
There is. We've got what they call an open door policy as far as immigration is concerned. I heard you mention that earlier on. There are massive influxes of people from Eastern Europe and from North Africa into our country now. If you go to London, you'll hardly hear an English accent in London. If you go on the tubes, it's exactly the same. The tubes are the underground system up there. We have got massive problems. It was admitted by the government just quite recently that they've got absolutely no idea of the true number of people coming to this country illegally, or the number of immigrants that are coming into this country, simply because we've got this EU open door policy. There are massive strains taking place now over here. We're building up trouble for the future. There are different kinds of communities being formed all over this small island of ours, and this can only mean trouble very soon.
Well, now, Chris, when a person comes into your country, do they automatically become eligible for all of the wonderful welfare benefits you have, you know, free health care and all the other benefits which are available to British citizens?
Yes, they do, and you can imagine the strains and stresses that are caused on our National Health Service. We've got this National Health Service from the cradle to the grave, so to speak, where we're looked after with our health care. Well, as soon as people come to this country with, if you like, incurable conditions, then as long as they can get in, then we then treat them for the rest of their lives.
Well, of course, now, do they have to be healthy to come in? In other words, they are sick and they have obviously an incurable disease like AIDS. Are they allowed to come in?
Yes, they are. And that's one of those conditions where if they are successful in getting into our country, we then have to treat them for the rest of their lives.
How long can Great Britain afford to do that? I mean, are you having as many problems with your economy as we are here in the United States? We're having to borrow from throughout the rest of the world about $3 billion every single day simply to meet all of our debts and all of our requirements. I don't know what's going to happen if other countries or the central bank stop lending to us. But how is Great Britain managing? It's a small island compared with the United States.
It's managing by taxing increasingly the indigenous population. They're putting taxes on almost everything here, and you can imagine why. We're paying out £39 million every day just to meet our EU contributions, and so they're taxing almost everything you can think of. Anything that moves now is taxed. And so that's the way things are going in this country. Taxes are rising tremendously.
Well, now, of course, when you talk about the, being it's this 39,000, whatever it is,
million,
that's every day. Now, that's really for your participation in the European Union?
That's our contribution to the EU budget. But the actual cost to this country of belonging to the European Union ranges from between 40 billions a year, 40 billions a year to 120 billions a year. So somewhere between those two figures is what it actually costs this country to belong to the European Union. We actually get nothing out of our membership of the EU.
My understanding is, of course, that a lot of the money that you send there then is actually sent into Eastern Europe to help raise the living standards there and provide, you know, the services for people in Eastern Europe.
Yeah, and we had the classic example quite recently of where an East European car factory is being set up, which is now actually taking the jobs of a car factory we had in this country, which had to close down because it couldn't compete with the Eastern European car factory, which we're paying for.
a lot of things just don't seem to make much sense unless maybe there's a different agenda that the average person really doesn't understand. And of course, that's really laid out in the Earth Charter, which calls for equitable distribution of wealth within nations and between nations. Of course, this is the, well, Gorbachev and Marie Strong and Stephen Rockefeller say this is the new Ten Commandments for the world. You know, the original Ten Commandments was written by God, but these people must have a direct communication with maybe a different God because it's entirely a different type of Ten Commandments, but that's what they call it. And of course, they keep it in the Ark of Hope, which is a counterpart of the Ark of the Covenant. In fact, it's a means of ridiculing the traditional Judeo-Christian belief of the Ark of the Covenant. Do people over there ever talk about the Earth Charter? Are they aware of this master plan for the world?
No, they're not. But quite recently, and I think you know this, Dan, I brought out another DVD or a film, which is, it's called On the Brink, Britain on the Brink. And towards the end of that film, there's a guy we've got on there called Vladimir Bukovsky, who was a Russian dissident at the time of the Soviet Union. And he looks at the Soviet Union and the European Union, and he explains how very similar the systems are. It's a totalitarian system. And all the things that you've just mentioned, he hints at in his discussion towards the end of this film. And it is frightening to see the similarities between what is happening to us and what happened.
At one time, and I've forgotten what the circumstances were, but the members of the Trilateral Commission, I think they were going over to Russia to actually counsel them and tell them how to run Russia. Do you remember that story? Does he ever tell that to you? Would you want to tell that? Because I think it's so important for listeners to understand the Trilateral Commission, which really controls the Bush administration. After all, President Bush is simply a front for Dick Cheney, who comes from the Trilateral Commission. They have an agenda. They control the wealth of this country. They control most of the corporations and certainly the great tax-exempt foundations that are funding the illegal immigrant movement and most of our problems. But what were they doing over in England? Could you tell our listeners that story?
Well, I'm not at all sure that I'm aware of that particular story, Stan.
Well, it had something to do. Maybe it was Russia. That I've forgotten exactly, because wasn't Mr. Bukovsky over in Russia at the time for a time there?
Yes, he was, and he was, as you know, persecuted for his actions over there. He was locked away in the gulags. And talking about the gulags. What he reckons is that we have a gulag here in the European Union, and so do you in America, and it's called political correctness. And this is what he says about it, that it's the thought police, if you like. You and I now cannot deviate from what is the recognized norm, and so on various topics like gender and sex and general behavior,
Many times, young people, if they want to even mention God in school, be terribly chastised for it, because really there is a conspiracy against the Christian God here in America, and of course it goes right up to our Supreme Court, which has outlawed mention of God in schools, and yet, of course, they start their sessions when a choir comes in and says, God save the United States and this honorable court, and yet these Supreme Court hypocrites have held, there's a wall of separation between church and state, and you can't mention God or teach about God or have prayers or a Bible in school or a Christmas pageant or an Easter pageant, but they can start their sessions talking about God, and it's all right to talk about God and have prayer in our Congress and Senate, but they're really, of course, targeting the minds of our youth, and they're doing a good job of turning them against any sort of values. And what a tragedy it is to rape the souls of our youth. And I suppose they're doing the same thing over in Great Britain, aren't they?
They are. It's amazing how the power and influence of the Church of England, which is the Anglican Church, if you know, it's strange how that's crumbling day by day. The things you just described to me, I can recall happening here. When I went to school, which was a while ago now, every morning we would have morning prayers, and everyone would attend morning prayers, and then you would go to your classrooms. All those things are gone now. The things like Christmas and Easter and Whitsun, there is less and less mention of them. And even the monarch in this country, who is supposed to be the head of the Christian church, is now talking about being the head of various churches, not just Christians. So you can see that the Christian way of life is breaking down in this country.
Well, of course, this is basically the basic theme of our ministry, is that there really is a conspiracy against God, and it's working at the highest levels of government throughout the world. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this afternoon, Trevor Coleman. And Mr. Coleman, basically, of course, we've had an opportunity to talk to a number of people from Great Britain who are concerned and really out there on the front lines trying to get other people informed. Now, what sort of results are you having? Are you able to influence the electoral process at all?
We are, but to a very small degree, because we cannot appear on, or they won't put us on the mainstream television programs. They won't put us on the mainstream radio programs. The national media and the newspapers don't feature us hardly at all. So I'm actually running a campaign. It starts on Monday here in the southwest of England. For those of your listeners, that's the sort of peninsula that goes right down to Devon and Cornwall. And I'm speaking to you tonight from the south coast of Devon. I've got a campaign starting in the south west of the country where we're telling the truth for the very first time in billboards and leaflets about what has happened. I'm looking now at a leaflet that shows the photographs of the five prime ministers. That's Edward Heath, Harold Wilson, Margaret Thatcher, John Major and Tony Blair. And it says, behind our backs, they've given Britain to the European Union. And for the very first time, we're coming out in the public and telling the people exactly what is happening. Now, we're hoping that the public will realize that what is happening to them, the taxes and all the other changes to their lives are because of their membership of the European Union. And the amazing thing is, Dan, that we have never been asked in this country, do we want to join? And yet here we are finding ourselves completely enmeshed in this terrible situation.
Well, of course, now, one of the interesting things is you include Margaret Thatcher in that. And, of course, here in the United States, Margaret Thatcher has always been portrayed as the Iron Lady, this wonderful conservative individual who had the courage to stand against the European Union. But then, of course, most of what we get here is really very, very filtered and controlled. So tell us your perception of what Margaret Thatcher really was about. I know that, she wanted to privatize everything, and, of course, they turned a lot of the utilities over to private companies. Instead of the price of utilities going down, they skyrocketed and impoverished the people even more. What part did she really play in betraying the British people into the common market?
Well, she signed up to the Single European Act. This was a treaty that passed over to the European Union the ability to introduce laws and to do away with the national veto. And she introduced qualified majority voting, which meant that, of course, that we couldn't say no anymore. Prior to that, we had a veto. But, of course, she introduced that, and then she said, now I don't know whether this is true or not, but then she said that she'd been tricked into signing this document. Now, she was a very clever lady, and she signed this treaty in 1986 when she was at the height of her powers. So you must judge whether or not she could be tricked at that time. But she has maintained to this day that she was tricked into signing that treaty. And of course, we do know that towards the end of her time as the Prime Minister, she became very, if you like, Eurosceptic. And it was because of that that the men in suits, as they were called, got rid of her towards the end of her time.
Well, because we had the same problem in the United States. We had Ronald Reagan, who said everything right. He was against big government, but it expanded it, both in California and at the national level, more than any other president we ever had. He was against it, taxes, and yet he gave us the biggest tax increases that we had. And his excuse was, oh, shucks, I really didn't know what I was doing. The other side lied to me. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this afternoon is Mr. Trevor Coleman from Great Britain. And we were simply talking about how certainly the last five prime ministers of Great Britain have actually betrayed the people. And, of course, one of the people who mentioned was Margaret Thatcher, and, of course, she justified her betrayal by saying, oh, shucks, I really didn't know what I was signing. Would that be, in essence, what she said?
She did indeed. And then she was followed, of course, by John Major, who was another conservative prime minister. You always get the story coming out of Britain that the conservatives are Eurosceptic. They're nothing of the sort. Edward Heath, Margaret Thatcher, and John Major signed three of the five treaties that now bind us into this. Edward Heath took us into this dreadful situation. So the problem that we're faced with, and I don't know whether you got the same thing over there, but the problem we're faced with is that all three of the major political parties of this country are bound to the European Union. They just want to keep us in the EU. So there's no alternative. And it was only when this little party, the UK Independence Party, came along that there was an alternative. Now, we haven't got seats in Westminster yet, although we have got a number of MEPs in the European Parliament. But there was no alternative to the people of this country, and so this project just rolled along.
Well, I think we have the same thing here. We have a two-party system, and both political parties push exactly the same agenda. Of course, they pretend to fight back and forth. It's sort of like, I don't know, you probably didn't in England never knew Amos and Andy or Laurel and Hardy or Martin and Lewis, and they just put on a great, great show. I mean, Abbott and Costello were wonderful. They were always fighting, but it's sort of like the Democrats and Republicans. And it's very entertaining. It's great show business. But the truth of the matter is, they were the best of friends, and they were just following a script. So, of course, the great tragedy is you cannot have freedom if you do not have representative government. And when you have these charades go on all the time, in your country and in my country, there really is nobody that people have to vote for who represents continuing Great Britain or here in the United States. maintaining the sovereignty of our nation, which both George Bush and the last presidential candidate opposed him, John Kerry, they were both globalists. They were both intent upon, you know, merging the United States with Mexico and Canada and then the rest of the world. But they cannot tell the American people. I think my impression is the one thing they fear more than anything is that their people might hear, and they might honestly believe if they actually got the truth. Now, how are you getting the truth out? You're mentioning you're doing billboards and pamphlets, and what sort of response are you getting?
It's amazing, actually. People are waking up very slowly, but they are waking up. And the kind of response we're getting is, first of all, this is someone talking to us. They're saying, we thought there was something wrong, we didn't quite know what it was, and now you're beginning to tell us, and we can see what is happening. The other thing is that they're saying, we're glad you're around, this small political party of ours. We're glad you're still there, because we do need you. Now, whether that kind of support is going to turn into votes, I don't know, and quite frankly, I don't care. All I do concern myself with is that people should know the truth. I leave it up to them to decide what to do then. But generally speaking, they're beginning to turn towards us. And the other thing, I don't know, again, whether this is happening in America, but people are getting so disenchanted and disgusted with the charade that is going on in our parliament that they've stopped voting. Something upwards of 40% of the electorate now don't even bother to vote. I don't know if it's the same in America.
Well, this last election we had, of course, it was was the primary election, wasn't the major election, but only 38% of the people in California even bothered to go out because, of course, most of the races, it really didn't matter. And then, of course, even if it did matter, they have the electronic voting machines that could come up with any conclusion that the people who program the machines want to, and we have no check on them. In fact, here in Santa Cruz, where I live, the person in charge is the county clerk. And the machine miscounted the votes for the county clerk, who was running against herself. She had no opposition. Most incredible thing. She said it was just so embarrassing, and it's sure glad it happened for her. Well, if you can't trust the machines voting for the person who's going to be counting the votes, how can you possibly trust them? And you can't. They've rigged elections here. A number of elections have been rigged with the electronic voting machines. Do you have those over in Great Britain yet?
We haven't, but we've got things called postal votes, and they can be abused tremendously. Prior to this postal voting system, we had a very simple system of going into a particular polling station and placing your vote by person. That was very difficult to become fraudulent. But now with the postal votes, there's massive fraud taking place.
And I'm sure there is. And the whole thing is that the people on the other side, they don't care whether the people want it or not. They have an agenda. If they're going to do it fraudulently, who are you going to report it to? Why, the very people who are committing the fraud. And that's exactly what happened in Ohio. And that's why we have the current president, if we do, in the White House. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and of course I really think that what we need is a very, very simple method of voting. And, of course, what we need to do is restrict the power of the politicians who do get elected. And those that do not abide by the law should be prosecuted to the full extent of it. Well, you know, really what happens, of course, if the people begin getting increasingly disillusioned, do you think that they'll vote for the party that you're pushing now, or they'll just stay at home and do nothing?
I don't honestly know, Stan. What I do know is this, that if we don't do this in a peaceful way, and we're trying to do it in a democratic, peaceful way and an honest way, then I do have fears for this country. We're a small island. We're a very crowded island now, and the stresses and strains are beginning to tell. What we don't want to have is civil disorder, but I fear that that will happen if they don't turn to us and we do this in a democratic way.
Well, of course, one of the things that we have growing in this country are large blocks of minority people, many of them who don't even speak our language, who don't want our culture, who don't want to be Americans. They just want to come here and get all of our benefits. Is there a danger, do you think, of racial unrest in Great Britain with the large numbers of people you have coming from throughout the world?
Yes, I'm sure of that. we've got those problems growing up in our cities. Down here in the southwest, this is a lovely area of Great Britain. We don't have too many of these ethnic problems, but in the cities, and I've mentioned London already, but it's not just London. The communities are not coming together; they are staying as separate communities, and the multiculturalism that we were told would work hasn't worked at all. And so we are building up problems that are going to escalate and get worse within a very short space of time.
Well, of course, a multicultural society doesn't work. A multilingual society doesn't work. In fact, there's a wonderful talk I'm going to be reproducing in my latest newsletter by Governor Richard Lamb, who said, you know, it's a blessing to be able to, you know, to be able to speak another language, but it is a curse to live in a country with another language, because if you don't have a common language, how are you going to bind the people together? I mean, if you're going to have a nation, there has to be a commonality as far as values and culture and language and beliefs and education, and without that, you're laying the ground for chaos.
Well, that's exactly, you've described the European Union to a T, because what they're trying to do, as you know, is they're trying to force together some 25 well-established and old nations into one. And all those nations, every one of them, Germany, France, Britain, Spain, wherever, they've all got their different cultures. They've all got their...
Hold that thought there, right, please, just for a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this afternoon is Mr. Trevor Coleman. And in Great Britain today, of course, they're having difficulty with multiculturalism. And, of course, they told him multicultural. You can have a multicultural society. You can have the British culture, and then you can have all these other cultures. Wouldn't it be wonderful? You know, we have a melting pot, and it's not working. And I believe that the people who are engineering this whole thing knew it wouldn't work. And then, of course, here in America, why, of course, we have multi-languages. If you go to Los Angeles, you turn on the television, you have, I don't know how many different, you know, stations there. You have a hard time finding an English-speaking station in Los Angeles. And I'm saying that very sincerely, and even on the radio. And, of course, this, I believe, is being planned to create discord and chaos in our community. Now, certainly, do you have a problem as far as multiculturalism? Do you have a problem with this bilingual situation over there? They just, everybody speaks their own language. There's no other predominant language competing with English?
There are a growing number of TV channels now which cater for the various different ethnic groups. The other thing, of course, is that Britishness and particularly Englishness is now being actively discouraged here, would you believe? Our cultural heritage, our cultural heritage and our very way of life is now being discouraged. And the other, if you like, the new immigrant lives are being fostered.
I think this is really a conscious, organized effort to destroy Great Britain. Great Britain has been there, almost 1,000 years, well over 1,000 years, and you know it has a great tradition. And there's something very, very, very different about the British and about their whole attitude towards life. And they're very productive and wonderful people. But if you could destroy that and almost make you feel a little embarrassed because you want to be British. Destroy the culture of a nation, you destroy the nation.
Yes.
Well, now, go ahead.
What I was going to say was that what we're finding is that even though people like myself know about what is happening, some of us are beginning to lose heart, and more are emigrating from these islands, places like New Zealand and Australia. Although I'm told by my friends down under that things are changing there in a way very similar to what we've been discussing here.
Well, Trevor, this is a worldwide coordinated movement. It's in my estimation, it's being coordinated all by the same people all throughout the world who have exactly the same agenda, but they cannot let the public know. Well, do you have a website or anything, a telephone number, anything that you'd like to get out to our listeners? Perhaps your new video, new DVD you'd like to talk a little bit about?
Yes, sure. The DVD, which is entitled Britain on the Brink, features some people who are well known in Britain, It's introduced by a guy called Sir Patrick Moore, who's a sort of nationally acclaimed astronomer, would you believe, but he's a great patriot as well. And then we've got journalists and other people who are able to talk about what is happening to our country and the fact that there's no need for it to happen. I was interested in listening to what you said about what's happening to America, in that the things we were told, that it's good for trade, it's good for everyone, it'll keep the peace and all the rest of it, all those things are shown to have been complete myths over here. It is the complete opposite of, in fact, what is happening, and it sounds as though that's happening to you. But the little group that's made this film that I belong to is called Sanity, S-A-N-I-T-Y, and we've got a website, www.sanity.org.uk. Very weird kind of address, but that's it. And the website will be open very soon, and on it will be not only this film, but the other DVDs and VHS films that we've made in the past, of which we've distributed and sold nearly 100,000.
I think that's wonderful, and obviously you obviously have a good group of people working over there trying to get the truth out. We have one advantage you don't have, and that is we do have at least a few small radio stations that have not yet been bought up, although I will tell you that the people of great wealth are going around buying up those radio stations and neutralizing them, and of course we have Christian radio here, very strong Christian radio, but even those stations are being systematically brought up to silence any voice of dissent, because the people who are doing this have unlimited wealth. They really control the wealth, not only of our country, but the world. And, of course, they have the ability, through the banking system, that they can produce all the money they want to. They can banks create money out of nothing, and when you have unlimited money, why, of course, you have an unlimited power. So,
well, you're still very lucky, Stan, that in your country that you've still got these radio stations and some small TV stations as well. We just haven't got that opportunity over here. That is denied us.
Well, I think that at least maybe we can get some of the English people listening to our programs, and there are a number of programs, and we have our own satellite now where we actually are on 9 hours a day with my friend Joyce Roddy, who does a wonderful job, and a couple of ministers. So we have 24 hours a day Christian programming on Telstar 5. Well, if you're out there in the listening audience and you'd like to speak to Mr. Coleman, don't be bashful. Give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And it is very important that our people here in America understand that the same thing is happening in Great Britain that's happening here, only, of course, it's happening more rapidly over there. I understand now that you're not allowed to sell in pounds. You have to sell in, what is that, the kilograms or things like that, and it becomes almost a federal crime to sell in pounds rather than kilograms?
Yes. We were pounds and ounces and miles and yards and inches, and now we've got to go to the continental system, and you're absolutely right. It is becoming an offense if we don't use these new measurements, and of course people don't like that at all. Everything that is British, anything that you can think of that is British, for example, our British system of justice, that has got to go. Your system over there is built very much on our system, with habeas corpus, the right to silence, the presumption of innocence, all these things that we take for granted as being part of our liberty and things to protect us, and which you've used as well, all those things must go, and we must have the new continental system, which does away with habeas corpus, for example. In this country, you can only be arrested and held by the police for about 3 days. Under the new system from the continent, you can be held for 90 days without charge. This is amazing. And all these things are being brought in, and not a word is being spoken. Our opposition party in Parliament doesn't oppose, and as you quite rightly said, the Prime Minister's question times and the debates that take place in our Parliament are just a pure pantomime.
And I think it's so important for at least the Americans listening to this program to understand the implications of losing this wonderful judicial system, which truly we did inherit from the British. In fact, so many of the ideas, America had came out of British law, but of course British law was based upon the Bible. And, of course, these ideas of, you know, of course, you were innocent until you were proven guilty. Under this other system, you're guilty until you're proven innocent, and you're going to be in a court where they speak a different language, and how are you going to get a lawyer? How are you going to... You will have no rights, and this is exactly what is planned. This is certainly the blueprint for a dictatorship, because there are people who have a different view. They do not want... people to have individual or constitutional rights. In fact, the FBI has gone so far as to tell, put out a pamphlet, and we'll be glad to send anybody who would like a copy. It was put out back in 1999 by the FBI office in Phoenix that says you could tell a terrorist because he would be talking about the Constitution. So we have real problems with the FBI and with every level of our government, because we have people there who don't believe in our Constitution, who do not believe in individual freedom. Well, what about the police over there? What about the military? Do they understand what's happening? Are they dedicated to preserving Great Britain, or are they simply going to go along and do what they're told to do without ever questioning the fact that the people in charge are violating the very Constitution of Great Britain?
Well, I'll answer that in two ways. First of all, the military. They're a disciplined body, as you know, and you must obey orders. But what we've noticed, and it may just be coincidental, is that Tony Blair has been very anxious to keep our armed forces out of this country. He sent them, as you know, into Iraq, they're over in Afghanistan, they're in Bosnia, and so he's always finding something to keep them out of this country, and out of the way. As far as the police are concerned, there's great concern at the moment in this country, because the Home Office, that's the Department of Government that deals with the police, they want to cut down the number of police forces in this country. At the moment there are 43 forces, and each of them, if you like, is a local force with a local police authority. For example, down here in Devon and Cornwall, we've got our own Devon and Cornwall police, we've got a Devon and Cornwall police authority, and a Devon and Cornwall chief constable. It's very parochial. It looks after the local community. What they're trying to do is to cut those 43 forces down to 12. And would you believe they will then be within the 12 regions that they intend to break this country up into. And so the local feel of the police force will go. They'll be centrally controlled by the new regional governments. And as you know, the regional governments will be controlled by Brussels. So suddenly, almost at a stroke, our police service has been taken away from the citizenry and is now being controlled by central government. That's the kind of rapid change that's taking place in our country.
Well, of course, here in the United States, they want to do away with the counties. Now, here in the United States, the most powerful man in any county is the elected sheriff, and he's elected by the people. He is their representative. It is his job to maintain law and order. And, of course, traditionally, he can say to the federal government or the state government, you can't come into this state. You don't have that right. And in the past, many of those sheriffs have done that. Well, they want to do away with that because, of course, they have a different view. They want, of course, everybody answerable to the same centralized power. We've got Eric calling from Compton. Hi, Eric. Do you have a question for our guest?
How are you doing, Doc?
Doing fine. Good to hear from you.
Mr. Coleman, I was just curious. I had a conversation with... I was in the dentist office this morning, and we got to talking about the currency, American currency versus the euro. And I was just wondering whose currency is further in the toilet. In comparison.
And whose currency is it? Is the British pound holding its stability? What about the euro and its stability?
Well, first of all, since we left the exchange rate mechanism, which was the forerunner to the euro, Britain has prospered. We've maintained the pound, the pound sterling, and it has strengthened. And we've had, if you like, 8 or 10 years of prosperity. You can't say the same for the euro. There are stresses and strains in there. What they found is that, of course, the one-size-fits-all policy doesn't fit anyone. And the current situation is that there are a number of countries that are having tremendous problems. In particular, I'll just mention one, Italy. Italy now is thought to be one of the prime countries for leaving the euro, and unless things change drastically, sometime in the next couple of years, there's a strong possibility that in order to survive economically, Italy will have to leave the euro. If that does happen, by the way, if one of the major countries leaves the euro, that's the beginning of the end of the European Union.
I would have certainly hoped so. Anyway, anything else, Eric?
That was all, Doc. Thank you.
God, and thank you, of course, here in the United States, for our listeners out there, there is a plan, of course, to away with the dollar and replace it with something called the Amero. And, of course, it would be an American counterpart of the euro. This is all coordinated. The other side knows exactly what they're doing. They just don't want the public to know, because some foolish people still believe these archaic ideas of individual freedom and liberty and God. Well, Mr. Coleman, you know, certainly we support everything that you're doing over there, and I just wish that there was something more we could do, but right now we've got to try to preserve, America. And, of course, England and America are so closely intertwined. We have been for, well, almost for 300 years, this, you know, going back to the original settlers. So many of them came from Great Britain, almost 400 years ago, actually.
Well, you don't know how good it is to talk to people like yourselves and to talk to the American people. I do like coming to your country. I've said that before. But you don't know how comforting it is to be able to contact people like you. And know that there are folks out there that feel the same way that we do. Talking about the currency, and you were mentioning it earlier on, Scott, I understand that the plan is to have three currencies, the euro, the dollar, or whatever you're going to call it, and the yen, and that's the plan, so I'm told anyway. I don't know whether you're aware of that, are you?
Well, I think that basically they have talked for many years about these three trade blocks, three massive blocks, and of course, here, of course, they're moving very rapidly to unite the Northern Hemisphere. Hugo Chavez, at our instigation, of course, the American people mustn't know that, Hugo Chavez is supposed to be the wicked witch of the West, of course, who is a friend of Fidel Castro's, and he's trying to unite the Western Hemisphere, the southern part of it, against us. Of course, people don't understand that David Rockefeller's daughter is a very good friend of Fidel Castro, and Fidel Castro is a very good friend of Hugo Chavez, and they're all working together, and if it weren't for the people in the Southern Hemisphere being angry at America, they would never give up their sovereignty, but they're going to, and Chavez is going to play the gringo card, the Yankee card, and you've got to organize behind me to keep the wicked people from the North coming in, and they will accomplish their goal, and of course, ultimately, to unify the whole of the Western Hemisphere, but right now they're working to unify the northern part. Hugo Chavez is going to unify the southern part, and then we can all unite together, and then, of course, eventually we will unite together in a world, and this is the basic plan. Three massive trading blocks, and then eventually unite them all. And the average American, and I'm sure the average Englishman, has no idea what's really going on. And your job and my job is to get them to think. Well, do a lot of people over there have access to the Internet. I wonder if they could listen to our programs, because they're available 5 hours a day on the Internet.
Certainly, in Britain, we're well served with computers and home PCs. There is no question about that. But one wonders when, in the sort of small hours of the night, when you sort of think about these things, which is the wrong time to do it, one sort of wonders, particularly after one hears what you've just said about the sort of one world order, whether our puny efforts are going to do anything. But in the cold light of day, and with the kind of people that I've got and I work with, and bear in mind that this is a labor of love for us, and none of us were employed to do this. When you meet those folks and you realize how good they are, then we just got to keep going on, haven't we?
Well, Chris, my attitude is that really behind everything that's going on today, there are powerful spiritual forces, and those who listen to our programs regularly, I know, of course, the major coordinating organization in America is the Trilateral Commission, and if you go to their website, trilateral.org, and you look at their logo, why, it's a circle with three sixes. Who joined in the center to make up an upside-down broken cross. Why would they pick something like that? Why, they know exactly what they're doing. It's like they put the Earth Charter in the Ark of Hope. There's a spiritual component to everything that's going on today. And as long as we realize that our job is to do our best, I believe in the end, of course, the victory will not be ours, but the Lord's. And we're going to be back in just a moment to wrap up our program with Mr. Trevor Coleman. Well, Dr. Stan, we've got 3 minutes. Why don't you sort of wrap up your thoughts for the afternoon, or I should say for midnight over there in Great Britain.
Well, the first thing that I wanted to say was that it's good to talk to you again. We are going to keep going on. We're not going to give up. I think the same as you, that all one can do is to do what you believe is to be the truth. And the interesting thing about the people that come and listen to me when I'm talking, many, many of them belong to evangelical groups, and they actually pray for us. So I think that with people like that behind us and just telling the truth all the time, telling the truth, that's all we can do. And I do believe, like you do, at the end of the day, whenever that is, Stan, whether you and I will still be around, I don't know. But we've just got to keep on doing it, and we're going to win.
Well, I think we have to do it as our best. That's what we're called to do. And so I'm glad that you're over there doing it. And I hope that you're getting more and more people. I know I've talked to a number of the people who work with you, and Mr. Vladimir Bukovsky. I can never pronounce his name. Bukovsky, is it?
Bukovsky.
Oh, right, fine. And so many of the others. And certainly, I really think it's exciting to know that there is a growing cadre of people like yourself who really didn't even know there was a problem. And then one day you wake up and you realize, of course, you've never been told the truth. And once you accept the truth, then, of course, you have an obligation to become involved.
Yes, indeed. There's another interesting thing about this, which is nothing at all to do with what we've just been talking about. I was brought up a Christian, but I'm not really a sort of practicing Christian. But I found that being involved in this site, that it's drawn me more and more towards God, you know.
Well, this is what brought me back into a personal relationship, you know, with our Lord, you know, back in 44 years ago, because I recognized that the only logical explanation for what was going on in the world was that there had to be organized evil out there. And of course, when I see their symbols, you know, a circle with three sixes joined together in the middle by an upside-down broken cross, you don't do something like that accidentally. And, of course, if you begin reading their literature, you begin to find that the people on the other side are energized by evil. And when you understand that, there has to be a God, and if there's a God, then you certainly better try to be on pretty good terms with him, because if not, why, I don't think there's any way that any of us could withstand the terrible, terrible pressure, and the spiritual forces will be aligned against us. And I'm glad that you've got people over there, those evangelical Christians, praying for you. I know we have literally thousands of them here praying for us as well. Well, I want to really thank you so very, very much for being with us. It's a pleasure, and I hope you'll keep in touch.
I will, Stan, and thank you for giving me the opportunity to come on your show.
God bless you. Bye-bye. All right, fine. Well, that was Mr. Trevor Coleman, who is, of course, retired police detective there in London, and who certainly is working with the other stalwart patriots to preserve. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and I hope you enjoyed our interview with Mr. Trevor Coleman, because the same problems are over in Europe that are here. If you'd like to understand, of course, the immigration issue, we have a great four-tape set on the immigration issue. It's called The Immigration Invasion. And then, of course, we have a DVD put out by Glenn Spencer. Actually, it's called The Conquest of Aslan. And you'll hear many of the people who, you know, are aligned against us talking about how they're going to, you know, join the five states back to Mexico. Of course, this is all really aimed at inflaming you, because all of these people are tied into the Ford Foundation, and they're playing games with our minds. And many of them are professors, very well. They sit on the boards of great corporations. These are the people who lead the illegal immigrant movement. They sit on government boards. And it's all because of the Ford Foundation, which is funding the whole movement, going back to 1968 when they funded the formation of LULAC and, of course, as MALDAVE. And that's the Mexican-American Legal Defense and Education Fund. You need to get the book we carry, Importing Revolution. You need to be able to document what we're talking about. And then, of course, you'll certainly like to get a copy of my recent interviews with Dr. Jerome Corsi, going into, of course, the security and partnership and the security and prosperity partnership. Basically, there's a plan to do away with the sovereignty of the United States, to join us with Mexico. That's what this whole illegal immigrant movement's all about. The president could stop this foolishness tomorrow if he simply sealed off the border, which he could do. He's got a whole army at his disposal, but why, the National Guard troops down there aren't even going to be allowed to carry weapons or do anything to apprehend the people who are streaming across our borders. And then, of course, you have to understand that if the INS does catch people, they only catch one in four, and then they immediately release them. They call it catch and release. It's sort of like catching fish, isn't it? Then you release them, and then you can catch them again and again and again and again. And why would you do anything that foolish, unintentionally? And then we aren't, of course, certainly enforcing our immigration laws. It's illegal to knowingly hire illegal aliens. Why are we doing anything about the smugglers, the coyotes? We let them go back so they can continue doing it. Why do we do anything about the people who are making false IDs? It's a federal crime. We don't prosecute them at all. Because, you see, our leaders want this because they want a bicultural, they want a bilingual society, because that's how they're going to create chaos in America. The same sort of chaos that is growing over in Great Britain today. So, and then, of course, as our economy shrinks and there are less and less jobs, these people are going to demand that they have their rights. We saw almost a million illegal immigrants demonstrating peacefully here on May Day, the communist holiday. Who do you think financed? The Ford Foundation, the Communist Party. Who finances the Communist Party? The Ford Foundation, the Great Tax Exempt Foundations. You don't think the money's coming from Russia, at least not most of it. I take the communist publications. Boy, they are very expensive. They even, in many ways, printed on better paper than Time magazine, and they have apparently unlimited funds. The Communist Party USA, which, of course, for many years was largely funded and staffed by members of the FBI. We've created the best enemy money could buy, and people really don't understand how this whole thing fits together, and your job is to help us get the truth out. You need to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, and find out how from the very inception of communism, it was actually financed and controlled here from the United States. Now, I'm not saying we completely control it today, but we certainly did everything we could to help it, to finance it, creating the best enemy money could buy. And if you haven't actually seen our video, The Best Enemy Money Could Buy, my interview with Professor Sutton, if you haven't read his book, The Best Enemy Money Could Buy, if you haven't actually read Professor Sutton's book, Wall Street and the Bolshevik Revolution, you need to get that information. Let me suggest my video, The Best Enemy Money Could Buy, and then the books and my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. And an awful lot of people left the Communist Party when they suddenly discovered that it was being financed from people right here in the United States. The Ford Foundation, the Carnegie Foundation, the Rockefeller Foundation. Until tomorrow, may the Lord be with you.